Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, introduces its political video club. Right now on the site, we have an excerpt from a West Wing episode that eerily resembles the debt ceiling debate that's been happening in real life. I wrote up my impressions of fictional Washington versus real Washington. We have Brooke Gladstone's coming later today, and you can write up yours. Our political video club debuting now at itsafreecountry.org. Now, many people in the mental health field are labeling this generation of children the trophy kids. You know, everyone is special, everyone is praised. Daily Show host Jon Stewart summed it up this way in a 2010 appearance on Terry Gross's Fresh Air.
They're accustomed to things being presented to them when they want it, in exactly the form that they want it. And they're accustomed to the idea that I'm special and I can do anything, and if I do it, just by the very nature of me doing it, it is in fact then special. I came from the era of, you're not special. Don't, well, you think you're special? You're not so special.
So our next guest says that kids used to end up in therapy because their parents told them, as Jon Stewart says, you're not so special. But now she says, in a twist of fate, 20 and 30-somethings are seeking therapy because their parents told them that they were too special. Lori Gottlieb is the author of Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough. And she recently reported a story for The Atlantic about this trophy kid phenomenon called How to Land Your Kids in Therapy. Lori, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And let's see if there's anybody who will call in who falls into this category. I don't want parents of kids right now. I don't want parents of little kids or of teenagers, you know, telling me that you're trying not to raise your kids as too special or too not special and trying to create the balance. I know we're all trying to do that. I want those of you who are 20-something or 30-something who maybe did actually land in therapy, you think, because your parents told you you were too special. Anybody like that out there right now? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And that's the story that you write, Lori?
It is. It is. And it's not that people don't come to therapy because, you know, they had parents who were critical or judgmental or didn't, you know, make them feel special. But, you know, I think what I'm seeing now is these kids who are coming in who are now young adults, and they are talking about, you know, my parents were my best friends in the whole world and they'd do anything for me, and half the time they're still like paying their rent or paying for their therapy. And they're saying, I just don't understand why I feel empty or depressed or anxious. And they just don't have a lot of resilience. They don't have a lot of true self-esteem. They have sort of this false sense of themselves. And they're really struggling with dealing with the real world and being out there and all kinds of rejection.
And you have a practice where you're seeing this.
I'm seeing this, yeah, as a therapist.
What do you tell the people who come in?
Well, you know, I think what they really are seeking is some kind of reality about, you know, who they really are. And when they were growing up, they were always told, you know, you can do anything. And, you know, one person had said to me, I came home one day and told my parents that I was bad at math. And they said, oh, no, you're not, honey. You just have a different learning style. And then, of course, they got her tutors. And she said, you know, I'm just not good at math. And I think a lot of parents have a hard time acknowledging that our kids might be ordinary. Certainly at certain things. And so we feel like it's going to damage their self-esteem if we say, yeah, you know, math isn't your thing.
Is that why you wrote a book called Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough? You think that this should apply all the way to who you choose to marry?
Well, you know, I certainly see that sense of entitlement that these people are growing up with in romantic relationships as well. There's this expectation that, you know, just as their parents kind of delivered everything that they wanted, that their romantic partner is going to do the same thing for them. And that's just not what happens.
Jason, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to make the comment that aside from the term trophy kid, I've actually used the term the snowflake generation.
every snowflake is unique, and so you're
right,
so special.
Right, they're all so unique and so special, but they'll melt so easily with the slightest bit of pressure, so you have to be super delicate with them.
Does this apply to you?
No, but actually, I'm in my mid-30s. I have a twin sister who has two children that are 9 and 10, and that's actually what they call herd kids. So I don't know if it's morphed from trophy to snowflake.
Interesting. Thank you very much. That's a good one. Harmony in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. It's so funny that this came up. I've talked to some of my girlfriends. I'm 34 years old, and I feel like when we were young, our parents sort of showed their approval by saying, work hard, you know, if you work hard and do a good job, you know, you're going to reap all the rewards and benefits that you want. And my girlfriends and I, when we were in our late 20s, were finding ourselves in a depression because we put in the time, we worked really hard, we were good, you know, mm-hmm. good people, and it just didn't turn out that way. And I feel like, that sort of, this is how I'm going to approve of you, work hard, be good, wasn't just enough. Maybe a little bit more of like, oh, that's not good enough. You should have done this, you know.
Lori, does this fit into the pattern, or is this kind of the opposite of the pattern? Because it sounds like Harmony was raised that you got to work hard for what you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, I think what she was saying was that her parents were kind of saying you can achieve anything just by, you know, if you work hard. And I think that, you know, that kind of does set them up for the sense that, you know, what happens if you can't? And that's why when I spoke to college administrators, they were saying, you know, the other caller had talked about snowflakes. They were saying that they call this generation of kids teacups, because anytime something doesn't go right for them, you know, they don't like their roommate or a professor, you know, gives them a grade that they think they should have gotten a higher grade, these kids fall apart. They're just so fragile.
Harmony, thank you. And it's good that you recognize that pattern. Rob in Asbury Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi. What I've noticed with my generation is that by the parents telling them that they're so special, they put pressure on them to get occupations that are special, you know, doctors, lawyers, a famous singer. And when they don't meet those expectations, I think they feel they lose that specialness in their parents' eyes.
I think you should go out with Harmony, because you're about the same age and you seem to have about the same issue. Lori?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. It's kind of like the reason that these parents are, you know, we try so hard and we're very well-meaning, and I'm guilty of this too as a parent of a five-year-old, but I think, you know, we want our kids to be happy, and yet our definition of happiness is so skewed that it's also very intertwined with achievement. And so, you know, we want our kids to be happy, the happy lawyer, the happy surgeon. But if our kid was working at Walmart every day and was really happy and went to work with a smile on his face every day, the parent might not be so happy about that.
Does this whole article and your experience as a therapist show that Amy Schwa's parenting claims are right in the ever-so-controversial book, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother?
Yeah, I'm not a tiger mom, and I don't advocate that at all.
Constant discipline with the kids, work, do extra enrichment on math and science, then take two classical music instrument, you know, threads of training, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think that that's as narcissistic as, you know, the parents who want their children, you know, in my article, Wendy Bogle had said, our children are not our masterpieces. And I think that just as Amy Schwa was so obsessed with her kids' success and, you know, it was all about kind of her narcissism, I think that a lot of parents today are like that in terms of their kids' happiness. We're obsessed with our kids' happiness. So, like, your kid falls at the playground and all the parents swoop in. Your kid goes down the slide at the playground and everyone's cheering, good job, good job. Every time they go down the slide.
Ed in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Yeah. How you doing? I agree with you with the offer. I mean, I'm in my 30s, and I came from parentage like that, where everything was approved, and you know, it skews your sense of reality. Because when I got into the real world, like John Stewart said, you know, I'm not that special. You know what I mean? Everybody's different. And it's better to give a child, like I try to do with my child, it's better to give you a sense of reality so you know who you are and what your limitations are and what you really can achieve, as opposed to praising every breath you take.
Yeah.
Because when you get into the real world, you find out that, you're not that great, and you have to learn how to adapt. And if you don't get those skills from your parents, adaptability can become very difficult.
Ed, do you think, and then Lori, I want to know if you think, that there's a class issue here, that, you know, are all socioeconomic levels that you come in contact with having this you're so special problem, or do you think there's, you know, that it stratifies by class? Ed, do you have an opinion about that?
I think it stratifies by class, definitely, because I think you, like the American dream, you want your children to do better than you, which is another subject entirely. But,
right.
Yeah, I think it tends to stratify as opposed to class. I think that when you come from a poorer background, for want of a better word, or a more urban background, for want of a better word, you're used to struggle. You're used to strife. You're used to adapting,
right,
as opposed to a more wealthy or more well-off background.
Thank you so much. And, Laurie, you on that?
You know, it does somewhat, but not as much as you would think. So it's not like there are these, you know, this 5% of people who live a certain way, and that's what it is. It's more about a cultural shift that's gone on with our sense of happiness, you know, where everybody wants their kids to be happy all the time, and any tinge of non-euphoria we have to fix so your kid doesn't get into the school play, and you're calling the school, why didn't my kid get a part? Mm. Your kid doesn't get a birthday invitation, and you're trying to fix
yeah.
it.
So
you know,
if you had to choose... Is it psychologically better for children to have Joan Crawford as a mother from Mommy Dearest or June Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver? Everything is so sweet.
Definitely June Cleaver.
A June Cleaver mom, hopefully. Laurie Gottlieb, the author of Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough. And she recently reported a story for The Atlantic about this trophy kid phenomenon called How to Land Your Kids in Therapy. Great conversation and callers, great calls. Thank you, Laurie.
Thanks so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.